I need those proteins. The problem is because of the lactose intolerance, I can't drink milk. So the like cereal, getting protein from there doesn't really work. So eggs are a great form of protein. Also, I saw this commercial that said they were incredible and edible both at the same time. So I just sort of leaned into it.
You really needed the go-ahead on both of those things. Anytime I see a food commercial, I'm like, I didn't say it was edible, so.
In my defense, my wife made me give up bacon, which I was having almost every single day on the egg.
Jesus.
So now it's just the eggs on like a roll with hot sauce.
No hot sauce?
With hot sauce, yes. Oh, okay. But no bacon.
God, this is boring.
Yeah. You brought me into this world.
If only I could take you out. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best games of the month.
My name is Griffin McElroy, I know the best games of the month.
My name is Chris Plant, and I know the best games of the month.
My name is Russ Fresh Chicken, and I know the best games of the week. Oh, here's Chris. The deal, my wife is sick at home, so I really can't shout.
Oh,
so I'm
going to
be quiet this
week. This is going to sound terrible, but based on sort of the volume levels of the podcast and how they usually kind of clock in, it would be cool if she was sick every time you recorded. And I know that's a bad thing to say.
That's a terrible thing to say.
It's a terrible thing to say, but I feel like
you
completely.
You would make that sacrifice?
Yes. Justin, what is this podcast?
On The Besties, we talk about the latest and greatest in fashion, food, trends, web media, hiring, firing.
Fidget spinners,
naturally. Video games, music, concerts, live events, festivals. Festivals are huge.
Hot dog technology.
This month, we're talking about, we're going to really focus on video games. Now, my nephew, Kieran, was playing, have you seen this 3DS? Three dimensions, one screen is what he told me.
It was actually two screens. But
what kind of continue. Like weird goggles? Do they make you wear like the big goggles?
He wears big goggles, but he's huge into steampunk. He's 8. And I don't know if that's necessary for the technology because I was able to observe it in a sense. It gave me a severe migraine. I had to lay down and Valerie
gave me a back
massage.
Do you have a top hat with a bow as well?
What? Oh, Russ, if you're going to say something, please make it pertinent to what we're discussing on the podcast. Please. So video games this time. We're going to focus on those. They come a long way since Pac-Man.
It's a pretty slow month. I think we addressed that in the last episode, and I think we'll address it in the bad conversations we're going to have in this episode. Can we do some honorable mentions if anybody has any? I know there wasn't a surplus of playables, tasty playables.
I don't have any.
Okay. I've been playing Final Fantasy 14 again because Stormblood came out. I think I probably talked about it. It's funny. I was trying to think about the last time I was like playing it and when I would have talked about it on the show, and I actually stopped playing it last time because I was playing it and trying to tell y'all to play it, and you were like, no, we're playing Destiny. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then fucking 1,000 hours of my life disappeared. But it's really good. I haven't gotten to the Stormblood content yet. It adds a couple new classes and, you know, the usual MMO expansion stuff, but I really like that game. I really like what it does. Justin and I did a Monster Factory of it yesterday, and I don't know that it was a very good sales pitch for Justin.
Help me with something, because in that hour or so, or hour and a half maybe of content I saw, it just looked like the most MMO-ass MMO humanly possible. How does it sort of differentiate itself?
It's a pretty MMO-ass MMO. I like it because I played on PS4, and so I can Vita remote play it really easily. It actually works really well for that. It's really smart about control. So when you use the controller, you use the what's called a crossbar, I think, where you like hold down one of the shoulder buttons and then you have access to 8 buttons, and it's up, down, left, right on the D-pad and triangle, circle, square, X. And so you can map different commands and macros or spells and attacks and shit to that one. And then you have another one if you hold down left trigger. And then if you hold down both, then you have an access to another bar. And so like it gives you access to like all this shit you need to play an MMO. I think I'm mostly fascinated in like how well they facilitated that. It also like at times like feels like a Final Fantasy game. Like there is a story in the game and really good cutscenes, and the world is really interesting. It has a cool way of handling classes where you can switch classes basically at will whenever you want, and so like There's a, you know, black mage class, but then you can switch to the fishing class with like the press of a button. And it sounds like it would be really complicated because each class has its own like gear sets and shit like that. But again, the game is like really smart about how it manages those into lists and makes it really seamless to just like press a button and I go from being my white mage character to my archer character and switch. Yeah. Like, it's just like, I don't know. It's a fun world to just explore on the, when I'm just in the living room chilling and playing with the Vita.
Not to focus too much on this. One question before we close this out. I don't know if you're familiar with my TTC grading system for JRPGs.
I saw you tweet about this and I'm excited to hear your thoughts.
TTC stands for Time to Crystal.
Yeah.
And generally the rule of thumb is the sooner the crystal in the game, the sooner they ran out of fucking ideas.
Wow.
So yikes. What is the TTC in Final Fantasy 14? I mean, it's
like 15 seconds. Like you make your character and then you jump into a cutscene with a crystal in it. It's very much like that, but like, I mean, that's still my jam. I still get excited to see a big crystal. It's, you know, one of the prettiest rocks that there are.
Amen. Okay, anyone else play anything of note?
I mean, I just looked. I've logged about 70 hours into Plunkbat at this point. It's like all I do now.
Is that what we're calling it now?
I really prefer PUBG.
PUBG is much
better. Okay. What was the first one? Plunkbat?
Plunkbat. Player Unknown Battlegrounds. Brendan's Battlegrounds. I won my first game and like I thought that I would be able to like be done with it. Like the game really stresses me the fuck out and I thought, oh, I'll win my first solo game and then just like feel this relief like I beat the game and be able to walk away from it. But my interest in it has only kind of grown. That game is so fucking phenomenal.
Yeah. I want more clothing.
I've been playing in, you should take care of that, Rusty, be a professional, recording a podcast for crying out loud. I've been playing more Nier Automata. Excellent game.
Oh, no,
Automata.
Jesus.
Yeah, no, I don't want to talk about it more,
but like, I gave up on that game at a certain point because I was getting kind of bored by it. And then I pushed on. So I finished the first time and then started getting into the second playthrough. And Hachimachi, it's just such, they don't nail it. It's like, it's not a perfectly executed idea, but the idea of like replaying a game and like recontextualizing almost everything you do in the first playthrough is like so super fascinating. And it really, I'm just adoring it. Again, mechanically, I don't think it's, like, it starts to get a little dull by the second playthrough, even though your character has very different mechanics. There's just like a hacking mini game that's like an insta-kill with area of effect. If you can pull it off successfully, it's just like gets a little old and doesn't really flow in the battle the way that other stuff does. So that like it gets a little old. But like seeing the story stuff happen and seeing that recontextualize and seeing it change is like, it's like really, really interesting. And it's also smart in that the second time you play through, you have all your items from the first one, which eliminates a lot of like the garbage you wouldn't want to do twice. Like someone has like three esoteric items. They need to make medicine. You're like, oh, fuck you. I have 99 of those. Hold on. I probably dropped some on my way over here. Like, no problem. Which is really cool. And Nier Automata is an excellent video game. And it is.
I mean, at this point, your second playthrough.
Yeah, I'm a few hours into my second playthrough.
I cannot wait for us to talk about your third, fourth, and fifth playthroughs.
At this point, next month, tune in.
Please catch the fever.
Should I even say that I'm playing Wolfenstein the New Order, or is that, I mean, the Statue of Limitations?
I never played the New Order, actually. Wait, is that the DLC, or is that the...
That's the original.
Oh, no, I played the original.
I mean, the original, like, new game that came out, 2015 or so?
Great game.
Good.
Wait, you played that before, right?
I got to the train part that everybody talked about, and I was like, this is so fucking cool. And then, like, I don't know, man, shooters like this aren't my jam. I recognize completely how fucking, like, well-made they are. I kind of had a similar thing with Doom, where I played like, a few hours of it, and I was like, this is fucking great.
Yeah.
And then I kind of stopped playing it. it's really good. I don't know what else to say that wasn't said about it 2 years ago, but seeing that trailer for the new game like made me realize like, okay, I need to go back and play. I've been talking to Nick about it because him and Pat have been like leading these long discussions about how great this 2-year-old game is, and how there's this weird zeitgeist of like everybody one, like coming home from E3, getting home and sitting down at their PS4 and reinstalling Wolfenstein.
Very bizarre.
But yeah, it's really good.
Okay.
You finish it?
I don't know, man.
It's very good. It's an excellent video game. I kind of want to go back and play it again now, too, now that I say that. Let me install it. I'll be back.
Bye, Juice.
Okay.
Phones
even have been slow this month. Has anybody played anything good on phone? Playing Realm Grinder, which is a very good idle game if you want that kind of thing.
Still playing it. Fire Emblem. I'm embarrassed.
That's the one you didn't enjoy a month ago, right?
No, I just wanted to double check. I still enjoy it. I enjoy it every day. I play it every single day.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I was conflating it with the other Fire Emblem.
Yeah, that one sucked.
So let's start talking about our shit.
I'll go first. The game that I'm bringing, and again, we should preface this by saying, like, it's pretty dry this month. We've already said that before.
This is a good
game.
Why are you doing this?
This is a good game, but I
wanted to bring this game,
and you're
short selling
any
it.
Other month, and this game would not make my list even close. I would say it's a very good game. It's enjoyable.
I'm glad you're the one who brought
it. It's a good pitch so far.
Well, yeah. The alternative is not robust. Like, it was either this or Cave Story for me. Okay, so the game is called Cave Blazers. Chris Plant. Did I get the game name
right?
That's what
it's called. So you just gotta laugh.
It's a pretty goofy name.
It makes me feel like, I know that this isn't the intent, but the fact that this and Cave Story came out the same month made me feel like somebody's like, oh,
it's a big month
story,
for
Caves.
Huh? Yeah.
Well, wait, it's time to blaze this cave. I can jump that.
420 Blazer. Okay, so the game is Cave Blazers. It's basically Spelunky on easy mode. Is a fair kind of top. Wait, shut up, Plant.
I can't wait for Plant to just take your fucking thesis apart, dude.
Yeah. So
put it out there.
So
please
look,
just tell me about the fucking
you're
game.
You're a little man.
Okay.
You run around in caves, and you've got bombs, and you've got weapons, and you try to survive, and you go deep down, and you get gems, and you use the gems to buy stuff. And if it starts sounding like Spelunky, that's because it's very similar to Spelunky. But unlike Spelunky, which is incredibly punishing, as everyone on this podcast knows, and some of you quit almost immediately. This game allows you a lot more leeway, so you can, for example, fall on some spikes and not die instantly, or get hit by a dude and not die instantly. So it's definitely more welcoming and lighthearted and just like easier on that front. It does, unlike Spelunky, it does have a like loot based system, which has like weapons that have passive abilities and stats and like kind of a quasi weapon upgrade system. So it's like a little more RPG-y than Spelunky is, which is like pretty core platformer. But I mean, again, it is enjoyable and lighthearted, but like coming off of Spelunky and coming off of like Dead Cells, for example, which this also has a lot of sharing DNA of between the two games, this is obviously like a very passable, cute little fun game. But not like an earth shattering moment in my life.
What's
playing.
The platform?
Chris, you want to pick up the ball here?
Because I put it on PC.
So this is not really the game at all. But
what do you mean?
It's I'll give you credit. Like for the first 30 minutes, I think it's definitely the thing you're describing.
Okay.
I don't think it's perfect by any means. So I will grant you that. But I would say it looks when you start it like crappy Spelunky. Like it has none of the character of Spelunky.
I never called it crappy, for the record.
Yeah, it looks like a really bad knockoff, to be really honest. The characters are small, like much smaller. It has a weird sense of perspective, and you do start off like in a temple. The song that is like playing at the beginning feels like it wants to be Spelunky. There's cutesy dialogue that is not good. They managed to like have a crappy dick joke in the first 5 minutes, which I think is like most of the dialogue in the game.
That's my TTDJ is a really important metric for
yeah.
me.
So there's that, right? But then once you start the game, it feels like more of a mishmash of all of these, I guess you could call them roguelikes, that have followed Spelunky. So I think there's a lot of Rogue Legacy here. I think there's, I mean, just this like crowd of Steam games feels like it influenced this thing. So it's more of, it looks like Spelunky, but the reality is it's something of the greatest hits. So when Russ says it's like easier, I don't think the game itself is easier. I think like you just don't die right away. Like it's still punishing. The difference is there are more things to kill you, and therefore you have like life, and there's more stuff built. There are perks that you acquire throughout the game They're represented by these little circles that you'll tap, and it'll grant you +5 melee or +5 ranged attack. Or it'll give you special abilities like, oh, every time you fire an arrow, it also fires a lightning bolt. And the more you play, from what I can tell, the more you're playing, the more advanced these seem to be getting. It's really weird how the unlock system works. And then also the more you play and the further you progress, the more starting perks you unlock. So at the beginning, you start with like, I think like 2 bombs, and those are your perks. You might get a melee thing where it's like, well, now you start with +5 melee and this special weapon, or you start with only 80% health, but you get a weapon that every 10 kills, it like increases your strength. It becomes much more of like, okay, when I go in here, I'm not necessarily more powerful, but I can have like different methods of how I play through. The thing that's kind of a bummer for me so far is there are multiple bosses. There are bosses between each kind of area. So you'll have mm-hmm. 2 stages and then a boss. And the bosses are not ideal.
They're Mega Man bosses, essentially.
Yeah, they're just...
But not like super well crafted.
Yeah, they don't really make sense in terms of how you read them. Like, to develop a strategy against them, I found that, like, they were kind of unreliable to fight against. And the other thing is, there are some really cool weapons, if you play quite a bit, that can really change the game. There's one that you fire arrows most of the time as your long range, but there is a machine gun that you can get that is so powerful that it knocks you back. So if you fire at the floor, you can essentially fly.
It's like Super Crate Box.
Yeah, it totally changes the game. But unlike Spelunky, which has like this kind of small set of things, and you know, like, well, eventually I'm going to get some of this stuff, I have had that once in, you know, a number of hours of play. So I think like it, Russ is right in that like comparing it to Spelunky is really going to like not do it justice, because the things that Spelunky does really well, it doesn't. But I think it's also trying a lot of different things that Spelunky had no interest in. Like, oh, how do we create like a roguelike where while you're playing through, you're getting like increasingly powerful by buffs, which was never a Spelunky thing to begin with. So I think it's pretty good. I just think like, yeah, comparing it against like one of like the top 3 video games ever made.
Yeah, it's never gonna fare well in that comparison.
Yeah, it's doomed, and it's its own fault. Like, it really draws that comparison.
It borrows a hell of a lot
from the moment you start it. But ultimately, yeah. It's much. If it had any other visual design, I don't think like that would be the first comparison that would be made. Especially if like. It's weird, like, you start with bombs, and they become, like, almost useless immediately.
Yeah, like, it didn't seem, unlike Spelunky, it didn't seem like balance was, like, a crucial concern for the developers.
No, but, I mean, I think it's, like, $5 or $10. I feel like it was
cheaper. Oh, yeah, no, I would say from a bang for your buck perspective, it's totally worth it.
Yeah, I find it to be a really good, like, pre- or post PUBG game. Because
a cool down game, out tent.
Well, it is so fun. But once I play a round of it, I'm like, I do not want to play that for another 24 hours. And then I'm excited the next time I like turn on my PC.
Let's just talk about PUBG. I play it at like 10:30 after my wife and my baby are asleep, and I play it for like an hour, and then I go to sleep, and it is not a good pre-sleep. I usually like lay in bed for like 15 minutes just sort of unpacking the things I could have done better.
Hey, that sounds like my everyday.
I should go next, I feel like, because there's like a kind of a connective tissue here.
Caves.
Yeah, I'm doing caves. I'm doing, you also reference like a machine gun powerful enough to let you fly, and like that's that Cave Story thing also. So I'm doing Cave Story Plus. It is the new version of Cave Story that is up on Switch. And I think like I want to start off talking about like what's new in this version, because if you've played Cave Story, like there's not a lot here that is new. It's got, you know, remastered graphics, but like they were already like pretty sharp pixel graphics before, and so
Cave Story Plus came out on 3DS originally. That's
so
right.
No, there was Cave Story 3D, which was the 3DS version, and that was fully new 3D graphics. And it's sort of a divisive entry of this game, the way it was ported, just like because it is 3D graphics, and so there are some like feel differences.
Oh.
And this is a game that it requires like absolute precision at all times because it gets fucking super difficult.
Let me just clarify real quick. So Cave Story Plus came out on PC and Mac in 2011. And that's really what the graphics that you're looking at in this game
come
more or
less. There's also some additional like extra modes that are sort of like there's like bonus challenges, like a time trial of the very last dungeon in the game, which is like impossible, and a few other things. The big thing that's going to be new that's not here at launch, but later this summer they're adding local co-op for the first time, where you play as Curly Brace, who is one of the characters from the game, and I think that's going to be really fucking fun.
I love Curly.
But ultimately, there's not like a ton of new stuff here, and I feel like I should couch that by saying it's $30, and it started out as like a freeware game. You can still find that freeware version for free on your PC. I have played it a couple times now, the most on 3DS, not the a Cave Story 3D version, but just the eShop version. Again, this game has been like fucking everywhere, and you can find it on that eShop version for 3DS for probably like, I don't know, not very much money, certainly not $30. Actually, that may have been a DS game that I...
You mean the original
over.
Cave Story, non-3DS, non-3D Cave Story? Yeah, I think it might have been
So, like, all that said, like, for me, like, I love the Switch, and I just want to play my favorite games on it, and Cave Story's, like, top 10 all-time best games ever made, in my opinion.
So interesting.
Can I share a secret and a beef with you?
Yes, but I do also want to actually talk about what the fucking game is.
What is the game? I've never played it.
So Cave Story is to call it retro, I feel like, is a little bit dismissive, but it feels like an NES sort of adventure platformer action game that didn't get made because like it would have been the most ambitious NES game ever made. That's also kind of unfair because it's not exactly like NES graphics, but whatever. And it is a game in which you find different weapons and run around and you blast stuff. And what's great about it is that like the world is so terrific. It takes place on this island that are sort of inhabited by these rabbit creatures, and you are a robot and nobody really knows how you got there. And in sort of exploring how you got there and what the secret of this island is, you sort of unravel the story of the game, and it's surprisingly like really great, and the characters are all really memorable. But like the great thing about it is the feel of this game, and it's like it's unlike anything like that has been made sort of in this vein. It is so fucking tight, like especially once you get later on in the game and you have like a slew of different weapons that you can collect, and upgrades for those weapons are handled by whenever you kill an enemy, some of the time they'll drop experience, which shows up as like little triangles, and as you collect it, your weapons power up, but if you get hit, the weapon that you have equipped will lose some experience. So you're constantly like trying to choose like what you want to have equipped whenever you pick up these things, and like what your favorite weapons are and what you want to keep boosted. But then when you have those weapons equipped, you have to be like extra careful. Like it's really smart about that.
It's interesting, Griffin, that you haven't brought up Metroid, which I think is a lot of DNA sharing.
It does, but it's not exactly a Metroidvania game. Like, there's
no
like
it's more linear than a Metroid.
It is linear, but there's also like there's like a lot of exploration that you can do.
It's closer to like a Mega Man X when you think about it, because Mega Man X has like some replay and some hidden areas that you go back to. And...
yeah, but it's not mission based. It is one like cohesive world.
Yeah.
Where it gets really, there's a lot of like collectibles and a lot of secrets and like a branching storyline, and there are items that you can get. There's a system kind of like the Bigoron sword trading, where you can like trade in a weapon at a certain point in the game. But if you don't, you can hang on to your shittier weapon and take it further into the game and then trade it for something better later on. And there's a lot of stuff like that. There's a lot of like it feels like there are like secrets hidden everywhere, and like it feels like you can feel the like love that this developer had as they were making this game. And one last thing about like the feel of it, eventually you get like a booster, like a jump booster, and like once you get that, the game just turns like batshit like bananas. Like it turns into this like thrilling, really, really, really challenging, but in a really fair, like, I've got to fucking try that one more time way, culminating in, if you like play the game and get the good ending, in a final level that I referenced earlier on, that is like this harrowing, like, painful dungeon that I've only beaten one time, and when I did, it was like one of the best video game experiences of my whole life. And it's, I don't know, it's just a really polished, really clever, really, really, really charming platformer. I think it has a lot sort of it kind of reminds me of how like Shovel Knight treated me, of just like, it's not just a lazy retro game where it's just like, oh, we made DuckTales. It's like got its own shit
or
going
Stardew
on.
Valley, like it's exactly. A dude that was obsessed with these sorts of games, but right. Basically put his own spin on it and made it
and it's kind of weird talking about it, right, because it's nothing new. Like, this game came out forever ago, but I don't know that I've talked about it on the show before, and like I adore the hell out of this game. I again, maybe if you haven't played it, $30 is a good price to get in, but like, I don't necessarily know that there's enough justification for you to have to get it on the Switch, right? Like, there's a push from Nicalis to say like, oh, this is the definitive edition, and it's like, it really doesn't
seem
that
different.
Can you make
an argument that like, if you have it, like, the pickup would make, like, for, you mentioned like $30, then you, it may be fair if you haven't played it. Like, wouldn't the assumption be that it's been out on so many platforms at this point that the only audience would be people who haven't played it? I mean, like, you know, and what I mean, like, it doesn't seem like a first time port where everybody's scrambling to finally get their hands on it. It seems like a premium for people who, you know, it's a premium price for people who just apparently took the last 5 or 6 years off.
It may
maybe, yeah. But like, you didn't play it. Like, I right. played it, and I bought it just because like, I am sort of obsessive about like having all of my faves on the Switch. Like,
yeah, you also, this is my first time playing it.
But if you paid $30 for it, then that was a good price, right? Like,
yeah, I guess
that,
so.
That it's, if you're somebody who like really, really wants it on this, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like,
I don't know.
It seems like it's not necessarily
a great price as somebody who's playing it for the first time.
It's weirdly a lot. Like,
it's, I mean, you look at like the eShop prices for Nintendo. So like, you can buy Super Mario World, one of the greatest games ever made, for $8 on the Wii U right now, just as an example. So it's like, it's a tough sell.
I want to hear what you think of the game, Russ, since you're playing it for the first time. I actually saw your little notification. It's weird playing a Nintendo game and seeing a notification from my friends that other people are doing things.
It's very
right. It's not just weird that I'm getting notifications on a Nintendo console. It's weird that like other people somewhere underneath that big beautiful moon at this same time as me are playing video games on the like. It's still a very novel experience to me. But what do you think of it?
So I had played probably like 20 minutes. In the past years, but this is the first time I'm really digging into it, and I would say I'm probably about 3/4 of the way through at this point. I think it's very good, but I also think that time has not been super kind, in the sense that so many people since this game came out have tackled this genre, especially in the last 3 or 4 years, that the refinements that have been made to every aspect, whether it's like certain, how the guns feel, how the upgrades feel, how the whatever feels, I feel like this lags behind a little bit just by nature of it being a 12-year-old game at this point. I like the story stuff. I think it's, I'm like invested, and I think there's a lot of humor and the characters are engaging and interesting. But again, it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm liking it, but it, again, it's that $30 price is just pretty high for I think what is like should be $20, and I think I'd be very happy about it.
Yeah.
I don't
20
think
that seem coming, more fair, yeah, because the other option of that is, the other flip side of my dumb argument is, if you haven't bought it yet, you maybe not aren't dying to play it, and $30 may not be the price to finally lure
you
in,
unless you have a Switch and you're desperate for some game to play it on, which I know a lot of people are. I was talking to Plan about this earlier. I think part of the reason that this game is so well regarded, again, I don't want to take anything away from it, it's a very good game, but
yeah,
a
it, it, It's just like, it's hard for me to sort of be objective about it because like I kind of feel the same way about it that I feel like Undertale is going to come out on Vita and I'm going to play it again. And when I play it again, I'm going to be playing it the same way I played Cave Story, which is like, I know where all the secrets are. And it's like how I used to watch my own home movies when I was a little kid, just because like I
knew what to expect.
And you
had a lot of enjoyment out of it. I think there's two things. One, when the game came out, and I just checked, I think it was 2004 when the original Cave Story came out. As you said, it was a freeware game and like unquestionably the best freeware game that has ever been released at that point. Like no, not even close. It crushed everything. It was like a Nintendo quality game that was just released for free on the PC and you could just download it for free. It was amazing. And so I think that is part of it where like no one had any expectations and it came out and was like, holy shit, this is much better than we all thought. And the other thing is like in the way that like when Plant and I played Earthbound, which I had never played before, and Plant had played it when he was a little kid and it was a big part of his childhood. And then when I played it several years later and like it did almost nothing for me, I think it has to do with like where your brain is at that point. Like you listen to Pearl Jam when you were growing up, you love Pearl Jam when you're an adult. I think it really is partly that as well.
Yeah, I have found everything around it very frustrating. I'm more frustrated with like game critics than I am with the game. But this was a thing where I loved Kiro Blaster or Kiro Blaster, like his follow-up.
Same developer,
that game was fantastic and I've always wanted to play Cave Story and for whatever reason I didn't prioritize it. And this came out and I saw so many people recommending that like, oh, this is the definitive edition, you got it, it is worth it, it's gonna be something that you'll love on your Switch, it's so fantastic. And I completely agree with both of you. I think I can see how it was wonderful at the time, especially as something that was free. But like, wow, does it get off to a slow start? And wow, does the story not really make any sense for a while?
It takes a bit, yeah.
And I don't think it's bad. Like, I'm still gonna finish it. But it was a weird thing to be so, for something to be so like unflinchingly endorsed and then to like sink $30 into it, which is not cheap.
Right.
And for it to be like, yeah, this feels like it would have been a good game for free at that time. I am super jazzed to play more, but yeah, it's a bit of a bummer because it does feel like, yeah, I'm not going to have the same emotional feeling that people have for this game as the people who played it a long time ago. And I think this release is kind of built off that. I mean, so many of the people that I've seen on Twitter who are playing it are not even like, I don't even know if they're playing the game, but like my stream has been bombarded with photos of people who bought the box copy that has like the special mini soundtrack CD.
Well, that's fucking great. I have a notification set up for the Undertale stuff that got announced at E3 with the like locket that plays music. Like that nostalgia play is like, yeah, I'm here for it.
For sure.
I guess I wanted to talk about it on this episode just to say like, I think it's absolutely a game worth playing, even if it's not in this version. Although I will say like having it on Switch is another thing that is good about it, but it's the same thing you find on DS and on Vita, where I'm pretty sure it also is that like it's really good for portable play also, especially since again that last level is so fucking difficult and you will bash your head against it for a while and it's broken down into like 10 second increments where you die instantly and you're like, all right, one more try. And like I haven't beaten it yet on Switch,
you can't skip the cutscenes and it drives me nuts every time I die. I have to watch the cutscene again. I mean, you could make the talking go faster, but those two dinosaurs keep killing me, and I really want to jump off a building.
Oh, that's not the final cutscene, but
I know it's not. It's just I don't want to hear them talk anymore.
Yeah, it's a really good portable game. So just go play Cave Story. If you don't want to spend $30, go get the fucking free version and play it because I think it's a really good important game.
Do we want to skip to halftime? I was hoping maybe we could circle back on E3 stuff and see if anybody played anything really cool. Really, really cool.
I played Super Mario Odyssey yesterday.
What?
Yep. It was spectacular.
I got to play it at E3, and I really want to hear what Russ says about it.
There was an event in New York City, and Nintendo was showing off basically their E3 slate, which included Fire Emblem Warriors and the new Metroid game on 3DS. And
another Fire Emblem game. Fucking finally.
I know. Scratching that itch. But I played Super Mario Odyssey, and the one thing that, you know, when I watched the trailer that was released during E3 and before that, I was like, okay, this looks like a very enjoyable Mario game. Like, I think I'm really going to dig it. But it didn't, like, I was, like, excited about it, but in the way I'm excited about every single Mario game that comes out. And within 3 seconds of picking up the controller and playing Mario Odyssey, I was like, oh, this is some next level shit.
Yeah.
I don't know
if it came through in the trailer for folks like who didn't get a chance to play it, but like it feels fucking phenomenal.
It feels amazing. Like in the way that like your mind was blown when you first controlled Mario in Mario 64. And like, holy shit, I can slide down the banister. Like, there's like 16 of those insane moves that you can pull off just with like, I'm going to hold down the hat throw button a little longer and the hat will like float there and then I could just run in and bounce off of it. There's like a ton of those like new moves that like allow you to get around the world in really interesting fluid ways that I can't fucking wait.
I checked out the game. We had a few appointments for it at E3 because there was like some judges stuff and we had a video appointment. But the first time I showed up, I went with Nick, who's like a huge like Mario fan. And I mean, I am too, but like he specifically sat down and like tested out all of these moves that have been possible in 3D Mario games in the past, right? So like Super Mario Galaxy, like all of the different jumps you can do, like yep. the weird spin jump that like is deep arcana, like not surface level jump that you get, like everything you could think of that you have been able to do in Mario games is like represented here. And like watching his delight in that made me think like this game is going to be fucking excellent.
Yeah, I loved it.
It's going to be real good.
Another excellent game is going to be Spider-Man, a PlayStation 4 title exclusive to the PlayStation 4. Spider-Man games have had a checkered past. I'll be the first to admit. But
what was the last good one?
I mean, there's like one great one, and then two pretty good ones.
I kind of like the cel-shaded one.
Incorrect. There's no open world in that, and no swinging around. So you
open world cel shaded one. Amazing Spider-Man, I think.
Yeah,
it was
no, Amazing Spider-Man was not open world. That's the one where you switched between Venom and Spider-Man. That was Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, that one was had some okay stuff, but Web of Shadows was probably
with
the
weird
last,
side
like,
stories.
Yeah, that's the one where you like fought Wolverine.
Spider-Man.
No. What? That's Shattered Dimensions.
Man, I don't have stealth.
They've made a lot of these, huh?
Yeah, I made a lot of them. None of them have been great, except for Web of Shadows, which I think is a legitimately a great game where they did a great job with the combat and the swinging. And from what I saw at the, I saw sort of an extended demo from what you saw on at the press conference. I feel very good about it. They are going in. Obviously, they're promoting it a heck of a lot more than any Spider-Man previously. So it's like they've definitely got confidence behind it. And in a way, it's sort of inevitable. Like if you finally, it's a great character who should be very fun to be and inhabit. And if you put a chunk of money behind it and a developer that really knows what they're doing, like surprise, it's excellent. But the web stuff looked great, which is essential. It's all connecting to real buildings, which is cool. They have the combat looks really neat. There's like a lot of instances in the world where you can like do sort of one-off activities, pull a girder down on somebody or whatever. And you saw some of those in the demo, but we also saw different ones in the extended demo that we saw, which is cool. What they wouldn't go into and what I'm still questioning is, I think it's easy to nail, not easy. I don't know if I've never made a fucking game, but like, I think it's easier to nail the big set piece moments, especially because they're involving some cutscenes. But like the day to day living as Spider-Man is a game that like is something that a lot of games have struggled with. Amazing Spider-Man 2 notably had a meter that anytime you heard about every crime in Manhattan, and if you didn't swing across the entirety of Manhattan to stop that crime, it increased your notoriety, and then eventually people would start attacking you if your notoriety got, and including like erecting huge energy nets to catch you in and just ruin swinging. It's like
if you just didn't just, help anyone, like if
you
were passive,
it's just like a guilt meter,
that?
And it's not even like helping anyone. It's like if you don't want to do for the fifth time a frigging you know, stopping a car hijacking or whatever for the 30th time, then you are penalized for that. So that was not great, but they're not talking about it. So that's like the last sort of big question mark I have. But overall, it looked really good. I'm very excited about it.
I do like Sunset Overdrive a hell of a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in it for sure.
That's what it looked like, yeah.
The new Monster Hunter looks really good. I saw a presentation for that. Oh, geez, you could have talked about that in honorable mentions. You've been playing Generations, or at least you were back when we were at E3.
Yeah.
Did you stop? Please tell me you stopped. Please, God.
I'm out. I can't, y'all. That's a weird one. I had for a week two people who've played probably hundreds of hours of that game. And it's they help walk me through those beginning stages, but there is a ludicrous amount of stuff that you just have to Google. I mean, like you just have to constantly be referencing outside materials. And I'm very optimistic that in the next one, they can fix that. But it seems honestly like these games have a long running history, and it seems like there's so much that
they've been building on. Like every time a new game comes out, they add five new systems onto what the last game had. And after a decade of that, it's just like, y'all need to fucking stop. Like, y'all need to like reboot your shit, I think, a little bit, because it is. Even trying to teach Justin some of the basics, I was like, okay, yeah, this is, I understand if you want to quit. Like, I got to teach you how to use the fucking, like, Palico trading service to get extra honey to make mega potions between missions. Like, come on. Chris, did you see anything hot? I feel like we need to get back into it, but I know you were also hitting the ground.
I feel like I did, but now I'm not remembering any
literally,
of it.
Like, no games.
I mean, it was all trailers for me. I felt like every appointment I went into, it was like that Spider-Man thing where they're like, hey, remember that thing you just saw? Well, here it is again with an extra 30 seconds and a little bit different. I'm excited about Spider-Man. I was not super impressed by the Wolfenstein demo, which was weird and disappointing. I'm trying to think of something that I really liked that I actually played.
Apart from Mario.
Yeah, I don't know.
Were you not over the moon about Mario?
Was I not over the? Oh, you know what I did play that I liked a lot. I played Crackdown, and that was really
that's actually
enjoyable.
A good example. Okay, let me set this stage real quick. A Crackdown from home, like watching from home, watching the streams as they were happening, looked like pretty
God,
much
bad.
Dog shit. Like it looked like dog shit.
It looks like a fucking 360 game. Like it looks so much worse than it plays.
Yeah.
So how is it different from, I guess, Crackdown 1 in terms of playability?
So it is like how you remember Crackdown 1. Not like how Crackdown 1 actually is. Because if you go back and play it, which I did before E3.
It ain't great.
Yeah, it does not hold up
really?
So well.
Interesting.
But it feels like how you remember it. It's like there's all these new aerial moves, and the weapons are just wackier and more powerful. And the whole idea of like hunting down the various bosses,
agility orbs, and
well, that too. The agility orbs is still there, but hunting down the various bosses seems interesting. You couldn't do that in the demo. They showed some of it in the behind closed door stuff, but they also just have more powerful bosses. So now it's like this chaos mechanic where if you cause enough mayhem in a certain area, it will attract the big boss of that like zone. And that can be, in the demo they showed a person, I was a woman in like I don't know even what it was, like a hovering plane thing that was humongous and is firing missiles at you, and if you don't take out her, I guess, lieutenants and their chiefs, then all of those mini gangs attack you. So the whole idea is, like, if you want at the beginning, you could blow everything up and attract the ire of this super boss and try to fight them and all these gangs at the same time. Or you can pick off, you know, the different layers of the gang and then absorb some of their powers or skills or whatever, and then go and take the big boss on, which I think is, like, a good twist.
Sounds like some mercenaries
the original.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The original, I'm sorry, is the building destruction stuff gone completely?
Yeah, that's in the multiplayer mode, which
oh,
is...
Oh, there is.
Yeah, okay. So the multiplayer
that's
mode...
That's so confusing.
From what I understand, the multiplayer mode is being made by Dave Jones, and, like, he was the one who was, I believe, the original director on Crackdown.
Hmm.
And then the single player is being made by Sumo, who is, like, secretly one of the best third-party developers, like, in the business. They're the people who made Sonic Racing Transformed and the other Sonic Racing game, which
Sumo,
are great
Sumo
games.
Sumo Digital?
Yeah. They made a number of things, and apparently they're just, like, a behemoth now, like, quietly making all these games for other publishers. But yeah, I'm super duper jazzed about it. I don't know what Microsoft's deal was, because the rollout could not have been worse. Like, the whole joy of the game would be, like, oh, just upload 20 minutes to show that it is more Crackdown. That's what people will be excited about. And
yeah,
their model was, here's a trailer that doesn't really show it at all. Plus, it kind of makes it look crappy.
There were some fucking weird sales pitches
yeah.
for games. Like, really, like, Crew 2 was like, y'all didn't
but they
show
wouldn't
anything.
Even let you capture footage of Crackdown. Like,
yeah.
We at the Microsoft event, they were like, yeah, so we have all these capture devices set up. You can't use it for Crackdown, though, but you can shoot it off of the TV. So it already doesn't look, you know, like it would benefit from being seen in 4K.
But Chris, isn't that just like a. Well, I mean, sure, it looked bad. You were looking at
footage
shot on the phone.
But
of course, it's going to look terrible.
I really don't think the game's that bad looking when you're playing it, like, well, I mean, on their Xbox One X prototypes or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was, like, super fun, and it was... I just don't know what Microsoft's deal is. Like, come on, you don't have that much. You do have a game that seems to be genuinely good. Why would you not dedicate time to, like, actually showing that off? But I don't know, man. That company it is one ginormous question mark of a sales pitch.
Also, I play Agents of Mayhem, and they ruin Saints Row, and it's going to be a very bad entertainment product.
Let's talk.
Can I just say one bit from it, though? Just one bit to sort of illustrate my issues. There was after I'm sorry, guys. I only played like an hour of it, and if you worked on that game and you're listening to this podcast, like, I'm sorry, it was just very not enjoyable. Many apologies, but I love Saints Row, and this was not that. And except they're kind of trying, like, in the mission I played, the big boss of the level was, like, basically Justin Bieber. And it's like, oh, fucking finally, that somebody's making fun of Justin Bieber. But, like, that was one big thing. But then at the end, there was, like, a cut scene sort of sizzle reel. And one of the shots was a woman with a very large gun who grabs her crotch and just yells, "Tell it to the clam." And I just, like, this game, this franchise meant something.
It's a totally different team now, right? I mean, it's technically...
As I understand it, a lot of those folks have dipped is what I have heard. But anyway, Angels of Mayhem, hugely underwhelming. Who knows? Maybe it will be better, but it just did not inspire any feelings. I watched the entire thing, like, utterly stone-faced.
The Crew 2 is going to be a redemption story unlike any other you've ever seen. You can turn your car into a boat or a plane at any point.
That's
it's fucking
pretty
great. Who's going next?
I'll go really quick. Russ, I think you played this. Griffin, I know that you played a little bit, but I'm going to talk about ARMS.
Oh, yeah.
On Switch. And I'll keep it brief because I am no fighting game expert. But for anybody who doesn't know what this game is, it's Nintendo's take on the Mario. On the Mario, it's Nintendo's, like, fighting game equivalent of, like, Mario Kart is to racing games. That's not a real sentence, but I tried. And I think it was actually made by the Mario Kart 8 team. Is that right?
It feels like it. I'm not sure, but it does feel like it.
But yeah, it's 1v1, and each of the characters has wacky arms that have, they like are like springs or ribbons.
Isn't there
and
a 2v2 mode? I thought there was a 2v2.
I think you might be right, yeah.
Okay, anyway.
Obviously, I have not played much of that mode. but you can either play it using the motion controls or just like traditional, and you throw one arm at a time, and you can steer the direction of those arms, and you can give those arms different traits. So you could have a character who has one arm that is kind of like a shield that is very slow, and then if with another tap will then suddenly like home in on their rival. You could have one that is like a series of like five little missiles that separate, but they have like bad aim. You could have wrecking balls that are really powerful if they hit you, but really easy to dodge, et cetera, et cetera. And there's like a bit of like rock, paper, scissors going on. Certain like style of arms can block other ones. There is a grab mechanic that can be broken up by punching it. That it's very, very familiar fighting game territory. What I enjoyed about it, as somebody who really struggled to get into Injustice, mostly because I felt humiliated by the end of the tutorial, was that I felt like after playing through the campaign a couple times, which is in fighting game tradition, very short, I had an idea of like how to get better. I like had a sense of what the mechanics were and that I could learn them and I could improve. And also I was enjoying just using different characters. The art style and weirdly just the variety of fighting mechanic like styles for the characters and the ease of the game reminded me of Power Stone, even though they're very different. But I just kept getting that sense of that. It felt like a game Sega would have made at their peak. So yeah, it's very good. It is. I am really curious to see what it's like once competitive gaming gets a hold of it.
Do you think there's really going to be a scene? I don't know that it's really going to take off with the competitive gaming scene.
You know, like I don't put any game from having a scene, you know, like I think Nintendo is eager for something like that to happen. I don't know if like serious competitive gaming, but I think it wants people excited about it.
Just kind of feels to me like the sort of game that I've played, I have enjoyed, like it's not a bad game, but the sort of game that comes out very close to a console's launch that 3 years after the console's been out you 100% forgot it existed. Like, remember Fantavision? Nope.
I think that is fair. I also think it's up to them to decide if that's the case. Like, your first shot at a fighting game, I don't think is ever going to be flawless.
Yeah, sure.
So I am curious what they do to make it feel more precise with the sequel. That would be my biggest complaint is, while I definitely feel like I'm like developing a certain level of skill, I never quite feel like I am doing exactly what I'm intending to do. Which is an issue for a game like this. But I also really don't know how much of that is my own fault. Like, my instinct with a fighting game is to blame myself, which is not healthy, but that's just, like, the point that I've gotten with the genre. Just
sounds like my everyday life.
Yeah. So, it's good. It's also just very cute. Like, the characters in the audience at the fights will cosplay as you or the person you're fighting. The final boss, at least, well, I don't even know. There might be more.
No spoilerinos, though.
So much. What? I don't think it's a huge spoilerino.
I think it's okay.
I think it's a small thing, especially because, like, I don't know, people.
Is it Master Hand?
No, but it is like a cute throwback. I don't know if it's on purpose or not. It's basically Arms Goro from Mortal Kombat. Like, the whole time you're fighting somebody with arms. Two arms, and then you have to fight somebody with multiple arms. And let me tell you, not easy. I spent a lot of time. I played through a good chunk of it at my in-laws, and just quietly in my wife's childhood bedroom cursing my Nintendo Switch as I tried to beat this stupid boss. But yeah, it's good. I don't know if I can like recommend people rush out to get it if they're not already the type of people who are excited about it. But it's certainly not a bad game.
Well, just to close it out, why is it called ARMS?
So the thing about it is ARMS is actually an acronym for a really mustache.
So Justin, what game did you bring?
Yeah, let's move it on.
I brought you workshop it in your own time, Plant. My game, and I touched on it last month because it was released in May. Sorry, June sucked. Is The Surge, which I actually, fun story, hard deleted from my PlayStation 4, straight up removed it, fury deleted The Surge from my PlayStation 4.
Have you ever broken a disc, Justin? I feel like you're the type of person who's like broken a disc at some point. Thrown a disc.
I have not broken a disc. I broke
controller.
Two controllers in Dark Souls. Literally just like chucked it at the wall. Fuck this.
Who is that? Smog and what's his name?
Orlando. You know Justin's feelings about it.
It made buttons stick. It made my buttons on the controller stick, and the USB charger doesn't fit unless the controller's like laying perfectly still, or else it just falls out. But I won't buy new controllers because I had a tantrum and I should be a grown up. And now I have to live with the repercussions of my decisions.
It's a good lesson.
But okay, so The Surge, I got June was so bad that I reinstalled this game that I hate deleted. And I deleted it not because I was frustrated by the game itself, but because it just had these little hinky things in it that where you would lose big chunks of time because of like bugs or whack crap. Like there was one example of like I fell off a ledge, and it's a Dark Souls kind of thing, sci-fi Dark Souls basically, which is about as much table setting as you need, but I fell off a ledge, and on the way down I sort of like fell onto this pipe that for some unknown reason had geometry to it. Like it had been white box for some reason. And I don't know why. I have no idea why, because you would never, there's no going back from this pipe. So I don't know why it's like a physical object, but I fell onto that and then fell off to my death, and my like scrap, which is sort of the stand in for souls in this game, got stuck there on that pipe. And I was carrying a ton. And it was just like, you know what? Actually, I have a better things to do. I'm out. I'm done.
Remind me what that. I know it's like sci-fi Dark Souls, but can you remind me sort of what this game is?
When the game begins, you're hired by this company called Creo, which is sort of a stand-in for like Elon Musk kind of vibe, where it's a company that's trying to fix the Earth and like climate change is trying to fix it, and it's gone horribly awry. When you arrive, you are in a wheelchair, and one of the first things you do in the game is find this exosuit that allows you to walk without your chair, but also, you know, provides you immense like attack capabilities. And the way that manifests is as you meet enemies in the game, if they're wearing items, the armor or weapons that you have not come across before, you can specifically target the limb that that armor or weapon is on and then attack it and then cut that off before you kill it counts as the kill. But you can cut it off and harvest it and use it as your own item. That's also how you get materials for upgrading stuff, is by finding harder enemies. And that's a really cool loop. You know, it's sort of in this game, leveling up is not the biggest deal. Like you get a little bit more health and a little bit more stamina, but the main thing is that gives your exosuit more power. And what that means is that you can equip basically everything uses power. So your armor uses power, your weapons use power, and you have a bunch of different really powerful implants like that can generate shields or can refill your health or give your weapons elemental damage. And every one of those has a power cost as well. So you have to sort of be smart about which things you equip at any one given time, and you really can customize something that feels good for you.
You remember that dope Tron game? Monolith made like Tron. I think it was you called didn't play Tron 2.0.
Yeah, Tron 2.0 was fucking
super
great.
Good, and it had that system that where it was cool. Like,
yeah, I remember now, the first person one, right?
Yeah, super good.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, similar, sort of similar concept. There are some very neat like in-world side quests. The combat feels really interesting because you're slow, but you have moves that are fast. So like getting around, like positioning yourself well tactically is really important. And then, but the actual like attacking and combat is very fast. You also have a pretty fast dodge that you can use to get out of the way of stuff. But like, it doesn't have, the world itself is not as sort of engrossing as a Dark Souls thing. Like in every Dark Souls, I feel this great sense of like, man, I just got to poke around here because this is wild. And there's a lot of in-world storytelling, and the Surge isn't necessarily that. It's very industrial, sort of from top to bottom. I mean, it doesn't stray too far from that. But the story is very cool. The payoff is a little whack, but the story itself is cool, and there's some neat side quests and twists and turns and stuff if you want to pursue that. But honestly, it was just I really enjoyed the way it, like farming in those games can kind of be a chore. And it adds a really kind of, it adds some nice variety knowing like, okay, I'm just looking for helmets. And if you don't have a helmet, see, you can only get the armor if you attacked an armored part. And there are parts of almost every enemy that aren't armored. So you can get a pretty quick kill, but you get no sort of materials or weapons or armor if you attack that unarmored part. So it adds a nice sort of variety to it. Like, I'm just going to slice this dude up because I don't need anything he has. Some really cool boss design. I mean, it's neat. It's if you're sort of hungering for those games, which would be wild, because they got pretty frequent there for a little while. We've been in a little bit of a drought as far as they go. And so if you're really, hankering for one of those kinds of the games, I think the Surge is a very good one of those. Still very hinky. I mean, not like, as broken as some games Prey that I played this year, but definitely has some hitchiness that can be pretty frustrating. But I don't know, it's worthwhile. It's worth playing. I think it's pretty neat.
Well, thankfully we have a very robust July to look forward to.
Do we?
Just tons of games coming out.
I'm sensing.
No, there aren't.
Hold on, let me look. I like to do a little preview. Let's see. Looks like starting next week, we got fucking fuck.
Splatoon comes out in July.
Oh yeah, ugh. I played that. I played it at E3. It's gonna be great.
Also,
Crash B is coming out at the end of this month. Okay. Got to get him in there.
Is Yonder that like passive RPG where you just sort of wander around? I think it might be. And you just like, you like farm stuff and there's no fighting. It's like very peaceful. If it's that, I'd be down with that.
What the fuck is Fable Fortune?
I have no idea. It's probably bad. Pyre, remind me
what
Pyre
is. Fable Fortune? Oh, it's a collectible card game based on Fable. Fable's back, everybody.
And a lot of chatter. I don't remember what Pyre is. And then there's a Pikmin game coming out next month.
Cars 3.
It's lacking. But we'll manage.
Yeah, we'll figure something out. We got through this month.
August has a lot of stuff.
August is popping off.
Oh, Pyre's the game from Supergiant.
Yeah.
So I'm down with that. That could be really good.
And the Zelda DLC comes out tomorrow.
Ooh.
There's some.
Could that be a whole its own game?
Yeah, I think Zelda could take the place of Zelda. We aren't actually done with the show. It could try, Russ. We have to pick one of these games is the best game.
We didn't do that last week. We skipped it last month.
No, we did.
We picked it. It was
We fucked up because we compared it to Zelda.
Yeah,
which we agreed we're going to do by quarter. So,
which is fucking ridiculous.
Persona 5 is currently holding the title for this quarter.
Wait! Didn't we do PUBG? Didn't we do PUBG last time?
Yes.
I think PUBG won.
PUBG won,
but it beat Zelda when actually it had to go against Persona 5 because Persona 5
No, 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 no.
Wait.
Justin, it wasn't Persona 5. It was the Masquerade game that I forgot the name of that won that month, and Griffin was really sad about it.
The sexy brutality. Listen, we do this podcast every month. There are costs, and this is one of them. We don't fucking remember what we did last time, but fucking, what it, ARMS probably, okay, it doesn't
be. PUBG is the current reigning champion of this quarter.
PUBG is the second best game of the year behind Zelda. This is easy. Why are we fucking talking about this? Zelda's the best game
of
the best games ever made.
Is it better than Sexy Brutale, though?
Yes, of course. Come on. Next month. Okay. Move forward. Next episode.
Okay, the next question is, what's the best game of this month?
Yeah, we gotta pick a winner.
Can we just say ARMS? Cave Story's 100 years old. Nobody liked the first game, and The Surge came out and also the same year Cave Story did.
Yeah, ARMS.
Next episode. July, do it.
ARMS. Is ARMS better than PUBG?
No, next episode. We did this. I said it. Zelda's number one, PUBG's number two. It's done.
It's okay. Not number two. It's the game of the quarter.
No, it's the game. It's the game of the second quarter.
This podcast has been ARMS, a really massive success.
For Chris Plant, Russ Freshnick, Griffin McElroy, my name is Justin McElroy. Thank you for listening to the Besties. We will join you again next month because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Besties!
Stop it. It's in the outro. Fuck you guys.
Besties!